Some podcasts inspire their listeners. Some podcasts address important current events. Some podcasts make the world a better place. The Fish Golf Broadcast does the opposite, so buckle up for half an hour of wasted time. On this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I sat down with Brian Earhart. Bearhart, what you thinking about?
Andrew, I am thinking about the ever-evolving relationship between player and media in the sport of disc golf, especially on the professional level. It's seeming to evolve at this pace that's kind of mind-numbing at times, and it's cool and it's also uncomfortable. For both the players and the media. So that's what I've been thinking about a lot lately.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it's almost like nobody's steering the ship. We're kind of just figuring out as we go. And you're one of the people best in position to be thinking about that relationship and commenting on the evolution. Do you have like a 30,000 foot view of where we are right now and where we're headed?
Yes. So we have a guy on our media team who worked in the NFL and worked with NFL players. I believe he like,
just to be clear, this isn't you. You're not an,
it's not me. I'm not speaking about myself. No, I'd probably be even more polished, a lot more polished if I did that, but he worked like media ops for the NFL and he witnessed a lot of press conferences and stuff like that. And he had mentioned that the players are now not on the level that the NFL players are, the way they treat the media or speak to the media, but it's getting us like being a pro disc golfer is getting established enough to where like that relationship is starting to have to maybe have some boundaries and maybe have some guidelines, because it feels like for the longest time, the lines were blurred between media and player. Everybody was kind of buddy buddy with each other, and that's kind of how it was.
Yeah, for sure. I think the like Terry Miller, Ian Anderson generation, those guys exactly. were on the road with the same struggle as the players. Therefore, it kind of felt a little bit more like access journalism. Like they were very always complimentary to a fault to players. And it seems like as an example, the new wave of commentators on live and post-production is a lot less willing to call a missed putt an uncharacteristic mistake.
Yes.
They're going to call it what it is now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, like we've talked about before, no one's steering the ship and the blueprint is not laid out. We don't just get to say, oh, I want to study this football commentator and then directly translate that to disc golf. And then operations wise between in the media world, we can't just instantly pull a blueprint and go off of that. We have to design that, and we're still working on that right now. So
can you give an example of something that's changed in the last, say, 2 years that you've been working with DGN?
Yeah, I can definitely comment on it. I think the big comments that I'm getting are exactly what you're saying. I'm sick of the commentators being too nice to the players. And I have to go on a side note, because I thought about that a lot. And I thought about why that is. Why are we celebrating all the time when the players do something good? And I think it's because we have to remember that we came from Frisbee, where everybody was there to celebrate everybody. And that's how it was. And that's how they wanted it to be for the longest time. In disc golf tournaments, when I first started playing, that's how it was. C tiers that you'd sign up for the day of, even up to A tiers you could sign up for the day of. There was still like a 2 minute warning. There was so much camaraderie and so many activities that everybody showed up to and like hung out and connected. And it's this family thing. And I think that has changed a little bit, at least on the pro level.
I think so. And some part of that might be going to strictly tee times that, you know, you see the people who are a couple tee times before or after you.
Yeah.
But other than like the few people hanging out in the parking lot, like you don't have 72 all clustered together at a time.
You just gave me like some goosebumps thinking of like playing a C tier and everybody's around the practice basket talking, you know, shit to each other back and forth. I loved that.
Wait till I get that. Like Mike Moser or Eric Vandenberg or Elaine King on here talking about how cool it was to all go to the same hotel ballroom at Worlds and find out your next day's tea time.
Yes, exactly. We don't do that anymore because you know, players meetings are not mandatory because all the information's online. We don't necessarily need to be there.
Thank goodness, too.
I know. I'm not saying that I miss players meetings. Let me say that to start out. My favorite was a few years ago. It was like the Waco players meeting, which was in that big theater hall. And they said it was a mandatory players meeting or else something bad would happen to you. And like half the players showed up. I was like, I think this is the death of players meetings right now.
Yeah, that's pretty good collective action right there.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are a couple other things that you've seen evolve? Mm-hmm. Additionally, you've switched mostly from being full-time touring player into a hodgepodge of roles within the media sphere.
Yeah, and the reason I did that is because I saw a need for it. I saw that they had commentators. Mm-hmm. All those commentators had full-time or part-time jobs outside of commentary, and they didn't have someone who was kind of full-time on the road doing this, not as a contractor, but as like a, I will give you everything that I have and fill in every blank that you guys need me to fill in.
Yeah.
So I got the experience from play-by-play doing Gatekeeper, and I got so much experience doing that, as you are as well, like commentating for them now. And then I did some color early on for live, which helped me out there. I did some color for Jomez as well. That got me some chops there. They threw me into the on-course reporting my first year. So I've gotten experience in every role. And then I pitched them a job position this year that said, I'll do all of that for you. And then eventually, if you want to find me a set role, I'll do it.
Sure.
But I'll be the jack of all trades as long as you need somebody on the road doing that.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be very useful because all of those folks who still have full-time jobs, you know, they can't just drop everything and do that. But so sometimes you're in the studio doing commentary. Mm-hmm. Other times you're the guy on the course. Other times, like, do you ever get a free week? And if so, like, how free is that week?
Yeah. Well, if you get shingles, it's a free week for you, Andrew. And I got shingles like 3 weeks ago at the Cascade Challenge. I was supposed to work that week.
Uh-huh.
So I was sick then. I had 1 week off at Beaver State Fling. So I got a nice little 2 week vacation, but I am the most scheduled commentator or like talent other than Terry, who like is also kind of a jack of all trades as well.
Right.
But he's a contractor because he's kept his own business. He runs his own podcast. Because of that, his rate is high. Like he's in high demand and he kind of runs the show for himself. So like there's Terry and me that are kind of doing the same thing.
Okay. When you began doing all of these roles, was there a conscious effort to put your own stamp on the how and what you were doing?
Yes. I mean, that's when I started with Gatekeeper, when they gave me the opportunity, that was my chance to experiment and like just learn what the heck disc golf commentary was supposed to be like.
Yeah.
You go through reading all the comments, all these people say, oh, I love what he's doing here. I hate what he's doing here. And you kind of only pay attention to what the general consensus is. You know, if Frank 45, the classic YouTube commenter, will tell you that you should die, maybe you don't listen to that. But there's a lot of good feedback that you get, obviously, from Derek and Chris, but then obviously from the people listening. And my big thing was I think disc golf is a fascinating game. It's kind of a yin yang between golf, which is this really rigid score based point A to point B game. And then there's the Frisbee, which is just limitless.
Yeah.
And you can choose to play the game leaning towards either side.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't quite know what is optimal. So for me, I want to share that. I want to try to bring people into the beauty of this game and the uniqueness of this game. And I think that's appealing in the sports world. I think we have so much that's unique in the sports world here. Like what other sport are we throwing an object 400 feet, you know, 400 feet?
None. There are some, but they're throwing it exclusively for distance or for accuracy. Not
what are those?
Something like a javelin, right?
Do those go 400?
I'd say in the ballpark.
Wow. Okay. There you go. There you go. There's the one game.
Yeah. But like they're doing a very repetitive thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not shaping it in the air.
Yes.
There are other throwing games where things go fast, but they're usually a court style, like highlie or handball or something.
Exactly.
And those are often team based.
Yeah. So I guess to go back to the topic, like I've been trying to bring like my joy. I kind of lean more towards the disc side of disc golf.
Sure.
So I try to bring people into that. And I think that's really been my stamp. I've had to be careful with it, though, because at the end of the day, it is point A to point B. So I can't get too caught up in the nitty gritty of the nose angle of somebody's shot if it's not relevant to the situation. So that was something I struggled with early on when I was trying to figure out what my style was. But now I feel like I'm focusing really heavily on balance and trying to not make anything feel too worn out, so to speak. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Are there any sportscasters or podcasters whose like narrative voices, capital V voices, that you've kind of borrowed from?
There's a few people that I am blown away by. So Terry Gross does interviews for me. I think NPR, she does interviews, and everything that she does is so clean and concise. Her questioning is so fluffless, if that's a word. She's like the pinnacle in my eyes, someone that I look to, and she doesn't really do sports interviews, but I love the way she talks. Funny enough, Sean Evans with Hot Ones, his preparation that he brings to some of these episodes is like surprisingly good. And I'm like, okay, like he probably doesn't do a ton of research, but he does the right research and he crafts really creative things that surprise his guests, which is like, that's what you want to do. You know, that's his job. Right. So,
and has the ideal format for exactly. that. When like somebody's already completely disarmed physically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that show's genius. You have to admit that show is incredible.
I've never watched it, but
but
that's
you get
a me
the concept.
Thing. Oh yeah, that's a me thing, not a it thing.
That's okay. That's okay.
But I guess like taking off from that, I think you also have a pretty good knack of getting an interview subject or a co-commentator or somebody else to exhibit the best of themselves. Mm-hmm. How do you go about doing that?
I think tapping into that kind of dichotomy of the disc and golf thing, I've been doing more of that lately because some people lean one way or the other. And I try to say, oh, this person's a straight up golfer. This person's a grinder. They don't care how they get the job done. I try to lean into more gameplay, strategy, scoring, that kind of thing. Whereas someone like Gannon Burr, who, yeah, he's analytical, but like he loves talking frisbee. Mm-hmm. So like you just have to pay attention. And like you said, like prep work, like that's what we both do a lot of, is like trying to learn, like, how do these people think about the game? Where can I find quotes from them that like describe how they think about the game?
Yeah.
And for me, Gannon is easy interview because I think the same way he does. So it's just easy to jump in and say, I know that if I ask him to describe his second shot on hole 14, he's going to just tell me with beautiful detail. But some people don't care about that.
They've
some
forgotten.
They don't care. Yeah, they really, truly don't care, but they know the score. You know, so that's what I really try to do. Left brain or right brain? Like, are they creative or are they more analytical? And then try to dive into that direction. It's been successful, but if you talk all the time, eventually you're going to ask a dud and it's going to get you a one word answer or something bad like that. But again, this is year two for me. I told myself 5 years of as hard as I can, and then I can judge myself. So,
I think that's pretty remarkable that you have the confidence that you're still wanting to do this in 5 years and that the disc golf infrastructure won't have changed so radically that people like you and I won't be squeezed out because of media consolidation or live or post-produced going one way or the other. I don't know, but, do you have any projections for where you think disc golf coverage is going or should go?
I think consolidation will have to happen at some point. I don't know. This is me speaking from, yes, I'm a full-time employee of the tour. No, am I in any of the business meetings where they talk about the future. But what we saw with the whole Jomez thing, like we're seeing companies say, well, what's our next step? Like, what do we do? And where do we fit into this puzzle? Because I felt like 2020, 2021 was like, we dumped the puzzle pieces out and maybe there was, maybe the Jesus's face is missing from the last dinner. And we're like, what do we do? Like, what is the last piece to this puzzle? Like, and do I fit here? And am I that last piece?
Growth was so rapid at that point that everybody was just plugging holes.
Exactly.
Not, you know, thinking of a coherent strategy.
Overhiring, trying to just push. And then assuming that the next 5 years are going to be like that. So that's something that I think about all the time, almost to a fault. Like because it's nice and shiny and pretty right now, but we never know what's going to happen in the future. So for me, it's like, maybe like any job that you have in the corporate world, if you work as hard as you can and you, you know, network with the right people and let them know like how you feel about what you're doing and how much you love what you're doing and prove to them that you belong to be here. Hopefully if consolidation happens, hopefully the skill that I have is worth something to them. Mm-hmm. And if not, I mean, Scott Stokely put his face on barbecue sauce. Like, we could do that.
I mean, I think you've done a really good job of kind of reading the tea leaves and being adaptable, mm-hmm. like not pigeonholing yourself into, I am a disc golfer. That is all I do.
Oh, I know. It's scary. I mean, there's no retirement plan. Like, you sign with Discraft, you go on tour, you're like, oh, where's my pension? Like, you don't get a pension. You have to play really well. You got to be 1030, 1040 rated, shooting hot rounds.
For years.
And maybe you'll get a good deal. Like, there's a little luck. There's a little, like, influence you have to develop, like, within the game. Like, your voice has to mean something. The way you make people feel has to be, like, positive. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember, like, 2 or 3 years ago, Simon Lizotte, on a quick tangent, told me that he responds to every single message he gets on Instagram. I don't know if he does that anymore, but just the fact that he said that at like 70, 80, 90,000 followers, I was like, good for you. That's insane.
It is exhausting at 5,000.
I know. I know. You want to just like cut it all off and just say, well, if I respond to no one, then the bar is set.
Right.
But stuff like that, like there's just so much more than just chasing down like Paul and Ricky and mm-hmm. being 5-6-time world champ or whatever. There's so much more to making a career in this game, and you just have to make yourself so valuable in so many ways that the powers that be or whoever is going to drive the next level can't say no. And at least that's what I'm hoping for. I'm just going to work as hard as I can. If I need to go into the coaching world afterwards, and I feel like the media world is starting to crumble or Pro Tour's crumbling, there's always going to be people wanting to learn. There's always going to be a need for people to want to be world champions to train with somebody. Mm-hmm. So that's like kind of my backup plan. But for now, I'm trying to put all my chips in this basket.
I'm Zach Garlinghouse, and I listen to the Fish Golf Broadcast, where I learn how to swim.
Hi, I'm AJ Carey, and I listen to Fish Golf Broadcast while I take a dump.
If you like where this show is headed, stick around for part 2. We'll never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads to start the show, so please support the Fish Golf Broadcast by visiting discgolfbra.com for hats and other apparel. Fish stamp discs are available at fishdiscgolf.com and daddydiscgolf.com, and you can save 10% on upperparkdiscgolf.com with the code Andrew10 on backpacks and other items. And now, more lies and outrageous claims from our guest, met with calm reason by Fish.
So, a moment ago, you brought up Paul and Ricky and people chasing autographs for them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember starting in maybe 2014 or 15, mm-hmm. how you would go to every pre-tournament practice basket in the world, and there would be people waggling their left foot when they were putting?
Yes, and the slow draw down uh-huh. with the finger on the rim.
Yep.
Of course. It was cool.
Yeah, and there are still a handful of players on the Pro Tour who are now, you can clearly say like, oh, Paul was your favorite player, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Or people imitating the Paige Pierce wrist flick. And one practice tool that I like to get to is quote unquote, the part that works. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the important thing I'm doing at some point in my backhand, forehand, putt, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of players will just kind of blindly imitate something they see their favorite player do. Mm-hmm. And whether that's a mechanical thing or a tournament preparation thing, it doesn't always work for everybody.
No.
Can you give me some examples of things that you personally have done or players you know who are just squeezing every little bit out of their talent mm-hmm. or out of their skill set in order to be really good players?
I think, go ahead.
Players who aren't getting the notoriety because they're not necessarily winning, mm-hmm. but they are doing the best that they can.
I think the first person that comes to my mind is Matt Bell. That guy is so good. He is so good. And are you going to say he's the longest thrower? Does he have the prettiest throw? Is his putt as clean as Ricky or Paul? I mean, it goes in just the same, if not more, but like, it's not this like stylistic, like nose down grenade push putt. It's Matt Bell's like ever evolving putt. And I think he squeezes every bit out of it because he's a grinder and he cares so deeply about winning and scoring that he will do anything it takes. He has no shame in the way he plays disc golf. So I love it.
I liken Matt Bell to like a runaway minecart where like he'll be on a birdie tear and then it's like, oh, he's going downhill. Whoa, hang on. 13's coming up quick. Whoa. And he like corners too hard and falls off the minecart rail and takes a triple bogey. And then he's back on the birdie train.
Dude, at Jonesboro, there was a round I played with him where every hole I was out driving him every mm-hmm. hole. And a couple times he hit first tree when the kick like sideways, he had a really rough start to this round.
Yeah.
Up until like hole eight, at least from my memory, maybe I'm being hyperbolic, but I remember the emotion in the moment being like, Jonesboro needs some OB. Like we need something. But on hole eight, he gets caught up early in this big, I don't know if it's a Douglas fir or pine or something like that. Cedar, maybe?
I doubt it's a Doug fir.
You're cedar, right. It's not even close to a Douglas
fir. It's either going to be like cedar, dogwood, maybe oak.
It's so low ceiling. So when you get trapped in that thing, like, what do you do? He got trapped in it, and he flipped the disc upside down and just, like, played shuffleboard.
Yep.
And just slid it. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the sickest thing I've ever seen. And I've just been enamored with the way that he approaches the game, and I think he squeezes every bit out of his style that he does, and he's amazing because of it. He's a winner. He's a champion.
Yeah, it's like failure doesn't matter to him.
No. He looked at me in the eye and at Waco like 2 or 3 years ago, and he said, Brian, this is going to be about the fifth time I've ever laid up. And I was like, you don't know if he's messing with you or not, because he's just like very serious face when he's competing. I'm like, I wish you could put the slash S next to what you say, because I just don't know if you're messing with me. But like, and then he laid up and I was like, oh yeah, that is kind of weird. It's kind of strange to see that. But that again, that goes back to what's so fascinating about the game. Like, you have players that play so beautifully. Like, I mean, I look back to Macbeth. Like, I liken Macbeth to, like, Roger Federer playing tennis. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, like, a big, big one for me. Stylistic. They play some really tough shots, super high IQ, and people think they have to play that way.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you really don't. You don't have to play that way. He's just that good. So that's what's so fascinating about the game. You have players like Paul who want everything to be perfect and, like, optimal and, like, the nose angle and wing angle and landing. And then you have dudes that just chuck, like Gavin Rathbun. Like when I used to play with him in Illinois, I just remember being angry that he just threw the most overstable disc he could on every single shot and he'd whoop my butt. It's like, dang, this is not. Yes, it is. It is how disc golf should be played.
I mean, that kind of is the new meta. Like young players coming up, they don't know how to throw your bullshit Comet flip up. They have no idea how, because they have a forehand.
Yeah, and why? Like, it's in the air for too long. Like, the way you described the Comet the other day made me laugh so hard. You're like, it's, what did you say? It takes forever to get there, and it flips a lot and takes forever to get to the target or something like that. And I thought it was hilarious. I bagged 3 Comets.
Yeah, I understand. Three.
How many are you bagging right now this week?
I have 3 right now, I'm playing a 9,000-foot course.
You know, we'll see. See how it plays out.
Can you think of any other players who, okay, if you were an AM1 player and you clearly are not going to have the Paul Macbeth skill set, who is somebody's course preparation that you should be looking at to say, this is how I am going to play the course as perfectly as I can this week?
Kristen Tatar. I think she is the best golfer in disc golf right now.
What does that mean?
I'll explain. I would train a player to make decisions like she makes decisions. She can throw technical shots.
Sure.
Doesn't need to. The courses are not telling you to do it, so she won't. Whereas Simon, for example, always is like white knuckling. He's like, oh, I want to throw something so sick. But she never...
She doesn't get suckered in.
No. And again, you have to ask the player, this MA1 player, how far do you want to go in disc golf?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be a world champion? Because she's given you the blueprint right now. If you have a good forehand and a backhand, learn them both well, And then in each situation, watch her play a tournament. She never slips up. There's never a time when I'm like, oh, no forehand here? Never. It is literally like autopilot where you're just like, oh, okay. Like I did a podcast with Andrew Zimmern and it was like autopilot. I turned on the microphone and I was like, how are you? And then he gave me an hour and a half of his life story. Easy money. That's what she is right now in disc golf.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talking to Andrew Zimmern for a podcast, mm-hmm. that's really easy, right? Because mm-hmm. he's polished. He understands how to put himself out there mm-hmm. to make both of you look good.
Exactly.
What is it like to cover Kristen or Paul or another player who nearly always is going to make the right choice mm-hmm. and execute it well?
Well, what's funny is right now, she's like peaking right now.
Yeah.
Like I would not, in the next 3 years, if she stays healthy, good, she might get to come back to Pickard next year and change nothing. Whereas some players, they're always changing things. And actually later in Paul's career, he's changing a ton. He always has new discs in his bag. He's always like either dropping the off arm
his putt looks wildly different.
Comes in Annie, comes in flat, comes in low. So I don't know. I mean, covering Kristen when she's at the peak, at a press conference this week, I used the word boring and I think it was too much of a generalization. I think what I'm trying to say is like, I don't need to say anything. Like you're not giving me anything I need to speculate on. Like, good job. Good job. Good job. Yep. That's the shot. Yep. It's the putting that blows me away for her, mm-hmm. you know, the discipline with the putting. But Paul is like dangling by a thread right now. I feel like he's a banjo player from the 1920s. Who's barely on beat. You know?
Sure. Maybe not 2023 Paul, but 2015 Paul. Like, what do you cover there?
For him and Kristen are very different styles. Paul plays that very technical, flashy way of playing. And I wouldn't call Kristen's style flashy. It's good. It's really, really easy and good. But Paul was throwing shots and shooting 1070 with like these crazy nose angle hyzer flips and these like flip
always
up forehand.
Playing for eagle, running
exactly.
Long. I guess it's like Sexton or something.
Sexton and Kristen are similar, except I like Kristen's backhand better than Sexton.
Yeah.
But they're both golfers, straight mm-hmm. up scorers, golfers. There's a reason why Sexton cashed however many 125 Elite Series events in a row or something like that.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of that's what I feel like when you cover the best of the best, when they're at their peak, it's like, depending on their play style. Like when you watch Paul dominate, it's like, whoa, you're like, it's beautiful. And you're like, wow, that's really hard. Like, there's a ton to talk about because you're like, you don't need to throw that shot, but I get it because he sees the way this fairway bends and he's going to make it perfect. Kristen's like, if I just get down there within 60, I'm going to probably make it or come close if there's no wind. So it's just a completely different way of looking at golf. I equate Kristen to Ricky a lot more. Ricky is flat, stable, backhand, flat, stable, forehand. I'm going to go as slow as I can go. So I can get
full
there with
swing.
Full swing and get there with the least ground play possible and chip forehand whenever I can chip forehand. Like, I think their styles are almost identical, and that's why they're going to have sustained success. Gannon Burr said he's matching Ricky's style. He likes the stable flex line as well. So
right.
It's interesting. Like, Paul and Ricky were like the yin and yang to each other. They're like total. It's like Djokovic and Federer, you know, two different play styles.
Do you think there is a Djokovic if there is no Federer?
Mm.
Like, would Joker have had to develop that top end? Because it seems like he has been the only one who can beat Nadal
mm-hmm.
or Federer.
It's exhausting. He exhausts them with like high percentage play. And I think when you play, like going back to disc golf, when you play against a Ricky or a Kristen, high percentage play is like, oh my gosh, they are not looking at me at all. They're not looking at the field. They are just going to get through this course as soon as possible and get off. Like, whereas if you play disc golf with me, I might forget my score and like forget that I'm in a tournament and I'll be like, hey, you want to see this comet flick? Like, I literally was doing that on tour. I aced this is something that you'll enjoy. One of the highlights of my tour was not a win, not a top 10 finish. I aced You know hole 9 Idlewild, that like little guy?
Yeah, of course.
It gets aced like every year. Mm-hmm. I aced it with a glide flick turnover.
This is just the shittiest laugh. He's so proud of himself for this.
But it's a stupid thing to be proud of.
You're the only person carrying a glide in their bag at Idlewild.
It's worthless on the tour. It is a worthless mold to carry on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. That was my problem. I was the poor man's righty, and I was also schizophrenic. Not actually, but like on the course, but I just made weird decisions. I'd step up and be like, what do I want to throw today? You know,
this seems fun.
Yes. So it was good for my commentary career because I learned how to throw all these shots and I learned to appreciate them, but you don't need to do that. You know, I'm going to tell someone to play like Kristen or Ricky. That's like my personal, now if I'm coaching people, that's what I'll say.
That's really interesting. I'd like to talk a little bit about hole and course concepts. This is transitioning completely. I'm sure we could continue talking indefinitely about play styles and shots and all that stuff.
I've been doing that for 12 hours today. I don't know how I'm still going.
Fuckaroo. Brian was kind enough to come off of an Elite series where he was actively working all day and still come and talk about.
But now I get to be the guest, so this feels great.
Yeah. So I get to ask the hard-hitting journalistic questions like, Brian, what's the best course design concept that you've seen on the Pro Tour in the last couple years?
Ooh, course design concept.
Yep. Something that made you say, wow, this is what we should be doing, or that's really testing the players.
I know what you mean, and if I had gotten this in an email, I would have given you more. But the first thing that comes out to me, I love, just generally speaking, starting from out of bounds. I love a tee that starts from out of bounds and then goes back inbounds. We have to land in the fairway, clear everything. I love an OB carry. That's the first one that sticks out to me. The other one that I really like is slipping my mind right now. But I personally love disc golf where some shots have to be forced. Like hole, I believe it's 2 at Conopiste. It's this power uphill hyzer, but it has to flip. If you stock hyzer uphill, you're going to be short left in the woods. You have to get out there and it straightens at this certain point where you can't get away with it. You either throw like the sickest uphill flex sidearm or you have to throw push hyzer. So I actually have really enjoyed over time the amount of push hyzers that the players are starting to have to throw.
And a push hyzer is a hyzer release that is standing as it flies, but it never gets all the way over.
Exactly. And it doesn't really swing wide. It kind of just you jam it forward. Yeah. There's no room to swing wide. So we have a few of those on tour, and like the spike hyzer stock shot is kind of not allowed in a lot of holes now. I remember back playing B tiers, you know, a long time ago, where if you had a spike hyzer, you could get away with so many birdies.
Yeah. Especially on park style courses.
Exactly. Yeah. So, that's one. The other course design concept that I really like is like totally slipping my mind right now. There's a course that it's like slipping my mind.
Okay. Well, this is good content. What do you think is the worst hole design concept that you've seen on the Pro Tour in the last couple of years?
The worst hole design concept. Okay. I am so happy with what they did to hole 3 at Pickard. I hate a gap that you can't see that's really small. So like you bend a corner somewhere and there's a 5-foot gap. We had that on hole 3 at Pickard. We've had that on a few courses on tour, mainly on the East Coast, but I can't really remember exactly which ones they were. But that's one of my least favorite things, is an unnecessary blind pin.
Sure. So as you watch Des Moines Challenge this year, if you go back and compare to last year, there is a true way to fly the fairway now.
Exactly.
Previously, you had the suggestion of a way, and if you missed it by 1 foot, you were going to hit a tree. And if you missed it by 4 feet, you were going to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I really dislike holes where it's almost incentivized to spray and pray and have a worse outcome, or have a worse outcome for a pretty good shot.
I agree. I 150% agree. I think OB is necessary on the tour. I think we have to force driving to be harder. Like in golf, the challenge is on the green, but in disc golf, driving is statistically proven to be more important. Like it's literally drive for dough, putt for show.
Yeah.
I mean, putt for dough, both for dough, but C1 in regulation is
just getting there.
Exactly. C1 regulation is extremely important. And nowadays, the course design, and maybe this is a concept that I can say that I enjoy, is that we're forcing players to really work to get inside C1. But if you throw a pretty solid shot, you'll get a look from 45. Mm-hmm. So pin positions need to be in a certain spot to where you can't just bullseye 14 out of 18 holes. And that's like, and it's a little change, you know, it's a little like pluck of the basket from the ground and put it back in a spot that's a little bit more annoying. And I noticed that in Europe, they do that with pin positions in Europe. I played Tampere in Finland in 2019 and was like, wow, these pins are so hard to access. But if you're a good long putter, which on tour now you have to be, and it's entertaining to watch long putts go in. So that's something that I've enjoyed. Because it's given us a lot more drama like golf has on the green, essentially.
All right. I agree. I am excited to see where that goes. And I know you're going to be the one telling us all about it from the booth.
I'll try.
But kind of in closing, Brian, I feel like, is your podcast formerly The Buzz, then what?
Flight Diary.
Is that still going on?
It is. And everything was supposed to happen this year for the tour. But now it's they want it to be a bigger production. They want it to be filmed.
Ah.
And I can't just like pop up my mics anymore in my van and like do it. And right. It's so much harder to coordinate people that have full-time jobs and they have other responsibilities. So it's happening. I don't know if it's going to happen this year anymore. But it's because they hired me so late. Like it was like a 3-month negotiation process and they signed my contract right before the tour started. So really like I asked them like, hey, can you guys have, you know, I need the infrastructure built out. I'm just letting you guys know I'm not a professional videographer editor. I can produce the shows, get the talent, make something good. But I need help. And they said yes. But the fact that it was too late, it was like,
did you negotiate a couple big comfy chairs in there for everyone to sit in?
Not yet.
God damn. What? You need an agent.
I need a chair agent. I need a chair agent quick, but right now we have a couple of nice chairs. But no, they want to make it look nice. They want the lighting to look nice. They want to put the filmed episodes on DGN. I still want to do the audio. But it's a production now. So it's on me now to learn how to manage this videography staff for me and like what tell them what I need and delegate things. So this is a new thing for me. So next year for sure, once we have an off season to actually plan, like, hey, do you have this horsepower in your schedule? Great. Now we can start booking shows. I have a show called Catch coming out this year. It's going to be just 6 episodes pilot season just to see how it goes. And it's a passion project that I've wanted to do for a long time. And it's going to be like a shortened, condensed version of Flight Diary. Like we're going to play catch in a park, something beautiful, tell a story about a Frisbee, and then just open the door to whatever discussion we want to have. Kind of like what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
But with a Frisbee.
I like to think that Flight Diary, as well as Nate Sexton's podcast, were kind of spiritual influences for what I wanted to do with Fish Golf Broadcast. Like, this is very low stakes and low budget, but I think it's really important to share kind of the backstories and the thoughts of players when they're not on course.
I agree.
Because there's so many, like, cool parts of the disc golf pro community that are really underappreciated because we're all just watching the same 6 people on feature cards every week.
We have millionaires now. We have actual millionaires playing disc golf. But we have so many people who are like, they've been building up for years to just be free enough to go do this. And that's like where Flight Diary went for me was just like, what questions are your parents asking you about your career decisions? Like, how did you get to this point? How did you push through all the doubt from people in your life? Like, that story is fascinating to me. And I've learned, and you've probably learned talking to all these people too, like, you just learn so much about the perspective of how people look at life. Some people, it's not that romantic. It's just how it is. And other people, it's this long romantic thing. I'm one of those people. I like to see the world with that kind of color. But I've learned that, like, wow, I probably shouldn't all the time. I probably should just go for it. And that actually has helped me a lot. You know, Joel Freeman told me his parents were both artists. They did the thing that they were best at for a living. And they told him, do the thing you're best at for a living. And he's like, okay.
Here I am.
How simple is that?
Yeah.
So yeah, man, I'm excited to get it going again, but I'm okay with like things not happening the way I wanted them to happen this year. But I know that once we can reset and finally they know that I'm an employee going into next year, something cool can happen. So that's where I'm at right now.
All right. Building within the system. If you really liked this podcast and want to find me, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at fish58320. We heard a little bit about a couple of Brian's projects, and you can certainly find him on the Disc Golf Network. But if you want to follow him on social media to yell at him about how terrible and boring and uninteresting and just a waste of your 40 minutes of valuable time, where can people find you, Brian?
They can find me on Instagram. My DMs are wide open for that kind of content. I might hit you with the question mark, but...
He responds to every one of... No, he doesn't.
I used to try, but now it's like if someone gives me something juicy, I'll respond to it. Ooh. Good or bad.
Like nudie photos?
Well...
Flagged for sensitive content?
I haven't gotten there yet, so I don't know. I don't know what I would do.
Not quite a big shot yet.
I'm not there yet. I'm about like a J-list celebrity, so... And I'm living within that. It's wonderful. But they can find me on Instagram, Brian_Earhart. I had instructional series that I shot last year with Discraft called Level Up. Level Up Season 2 is a third of the way through filming. We're putting that on the Disc Golf Network, still sponsored by Discraft and partnered up with Discraft. So we have 12 episodes of that happening this year. And yeah, forgot about that. But yeah, you can find me out there on the course.
All right. Brian, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
That's all for this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast. But be sure to check out previous episodes and subscribe wherever fine podcasts are sold. Check out Fish Golf Broadcast hats and other apparel at discgolfbra.com and badger your friends until they listen too. Join us next time as I goad yet another guest into starting a fight with another touring player, campsite host, or toll booth attendant on the Fish Golf Broadcast.